Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe. And as always, I'm joined by Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison for another busy, if a little downbeat, show. We'll look back at another humiliating defeat for England as they lost the Ashes in spectacular style after being bowled out for just 68 in the third test at the MCG. We'll look at where they go from here, what can be done to improve test cricket in England, as well as hearing from Joe Root, Jimmy Anderson and Johnny Bairstow. So plenty to come over the next hour. You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. I mean, you had to sit through it. You did say at the end of day two that England wouldn't make lunch on day three. And, well, they didn't even come close, really, did they? It was, I just suspect you didn't know how bad the worst would be.
Yeah, I thought if we lost a wicket in the first sort of 15, 20 minutes, then there's no way we would withstand the pressure that Australia were going to put us through. In first sort of 10 minutes, Root and Stokes shaped up okay. And then it just seemed that the roller wore off, started doing a little bit more, and Stark got a one through Stokes. And the minute that happened, didn't expect 68 all out, but I did have a funny feeling that we wouldn't get past the Australian total. And there's an overriding of emotion of disappointment, embarrassment. You know, sitting on a sofa last night with Mo and Ali and Jonathan Trott, trying to pick a piece of what's just happened over the course of the last 3 weeks. It was really difficult because it's hard to have a big go at individual players. I think this is a collective thing from the system of English cricket, Red Bull stuff, the planning department of the ECB, because I think it's been ridiculous that we've probably had a plan for the first test in Brisbane, second test in Melbourne, and second test in Adelaide, third test in Melbourne, fourth test in Sydney, and fifth test either in Perth or in Hobart. I just felt as though they were trying to reinvent the wheel, and it's difficult enough to go to Australia to try and compete, never mind try and second guess, make bad decisions. There are players that will carry the can. You know, we dropped 10 catches, 2 no ball wickets, players not scoring enough runs, but this has been coming for a while. There was some optimism before we started, probably because Ben Stokes was coming back, but he was coming back in name only. We had to make sure that he got the right preparation to get himself into a position to perform. And, you know, with the ball, he's done his job because it's probably easier to get up to speed with like that. But the bat, you know, when you're coming in, when Joe Root's coming in at 20 for 2 and, you know, Ben's coming in at 30 for 3, they're not going anywhere. And I think it's very, very difficult to see how, you know, some of the coaching staff and the management staff carry on doing the job that they're doing, because the selection is a problem. Who's picking a team? How's the team being picked? Because some of the stuff that's gone is baffling.
Harmy, we're going to discuss the way that the game in England domestically can be improved to try and help the test team and the test team's fortunes. But you mentioned the senior staff, the coaching staff, the personnel, and of course there's captain Joe Root. This is what he had to say about his future as the test captain after the humiliation.
The series isn't over yet. We've got two very big games, and it's be wrong to look past that. Talk about as a player and as a team, you talk about the next hour or the next session or the very next ball and managing that to your best abilities, and that's all we have to focus on. That applies to me as well as captain of this team. And like I say, we got to make sure we come away from this tour with some better performances and a win or two under our belt as well.
Well, he's not thinking about the future then. But there are two tests to go. I don't know, Harmy, whether Joe Root's captaincy is irrelevant. He could have been Mike Brearley on steroids. I just don't think he's had the team. It may well be that he's had enough and he wants to step down anyway, but that's not the issue, is it?
No, it's not. Anybody that blames or lays the blame at Joe Root's door, or the coach, the coaching point of view of Chris Silverwood, then I think we're short-sighted. I can blame the system and the cultural element that is in place, the structure that's in place, and the selection panel that is not in place, but the coaching system that's picking a team that is in place, then I can blame that. But I can't blame Joe. No, no way whatsoever. That kid last night, forlorn figure, trying to somehow say the right things. Yeah, he looked dejected. He looked embarrassed. There was times where he got criticised in the media and on the commentary about maybe he's making the wrong decision, letting the game drift, bringing Leach on, not having possibly a plan from a field setting point of view. But what can you do? What can you do when the ball's leaking runs everywhere? They're milking you, and you've got a spinner that really can't control line or length. You'd be so short-sighted to label anything at Joe's door. What that kid's done this year is monumental when it comes to the run scoring.
And it hasn't affected his form either, has it? He's 1,700 runs, second most. If having the captaincy means he carries on batting in this form, then don't take it away from him.
Yeah, 100%, absolutely. I think where we played in Australia, it's a difficult place to go and play. We can blame preparation. I think we've also got to stick up for the one thing I will stick up for the players is manners. I wouldn't have fancied playing in this COVID bubble world for 2 years, to be restricted to hotel rooms, the mental, I think, torture that would have gone on in there. And it was bad enough to 2006-7, when we got beat 5-0 off the, it felt like 6-0. We got beat 5-0 off the best team and arguably the best team in the world. But geez, we could take the kids to the park, we could take the kids to the zoo, we could go out for dinner, we could go to the cinema, we could go and play golf. You could feel a human. They're caged animals, and they've been caged animals for a while. And I think eventually, I think you crack, and I think we're seeing that. I think we've seen that. So I think the ECB now have got to be careful. We've got a Caribbean trip coming up around the corner. And if there's COVID restrictions in that, I'd be tempted not to take any of these players that have been in the Ashes squad, just to give them a break. Not for performance, not because they've got beat or they will get beat 5-0. I'd be tempted to give them all a break, because we've got to remember they're human beings. They are the internationals and they get paid well, but financial reward in this situation is not something we should be even contemplating saying. They are human beings and have been locked away for so long now, to let out to perform, go back into these bubbles, to entertain for TV crowds and financial purposes of keeping TV deals, broadcasting deals right. I just think sometimes there's a tipping point, and I think England have, that is a small part of the tipping point of what's happened to this team and now why they're 3-0 down.
Well, not surprisingly, Pat Cummins admitted that he couldn't remember a series that had gone so perfectly for Australia.
Yeah, everything's gone to plan. It feels, I think our bowlers have been fantastic in that, I haven't even felt like there's been one session where it's really got away from us. yeah, it's just, it's what, you know, dreams are made of, the way we've played. And I think outside of the actual results, there's so many other positives as well. We've been able to have a couple of debutants, really build a squad of, you know, strong, you know, 15 odd players. It doesn't just feel like a 3-0 victory. It feels like we're really setting ourselves up for the next few years as well.
Yeah, that's Pat Cummins. It does certainly bode well for the future. Just finally, before we speak about the possible restructure and with Lawrence Booth, who's joining us later on in the show, Harmy, mental fortitude is something that Paul Farbrace spoke about in a very good interview he did with Rob Johnson on crickbuzz.com. And he really cast significant doubt on the mental strength of England's batsmen playing in Test cricket. You know, he said that they blamed pitches in county cricket. Too many said, "Oh, it's a result wicket," and were quite satisfied to make a quick 30 and not apply themselves. And he made it sound like it was prevalent, the majority of batsmen in county cricket.
Yeah, and that's what probably needs the reset button pressed and giving people a chance to bat for 6 hours and not having 60-mile-an-hour bowlers go up and get Marnus Labuschagne and Travis Head out in county cricket, which they did this year. Head and Labuschagne averaged, what, under 20? You know, Darren Stevens, 45-year-old, knocks over Marnus Labuschagne, the ICC best player in the world. And then when you looked at the LBW he got him with, you made him look a bit foolish about 3 or 4 balls before because he kept nipping it past his outside edge. Things like that, surfaces like that, are just no good. And I'm looking at myself here, and I will come on to it with Lawrence, but an 18-year-old Steve Harmison would not play in county cricket. Wouldn't play because captains and coaches wouldn't take the risk of him going bowling 10 overs for 50 because that's far too much. You lose the game. I think where this group's at when it comes to sort of mental side or where we are English cricket when it comes to red ball and the sort of in defeats and how embarrassing it's been. I actually think when England came back from the World Cup in 2015, embarrassed, tails between our legs, telling everybody in the world that we've got to change the system of our game to play on better pitches, to play and hit the ball out the ground, to beg the best team possible to go to 2019 World Cup with a chance of winning in England, which we did. I think this team is probably twice as far away than what that team was when we came back from, when Owen Morgan's team came back from the 2015 World Cup. I don't think it can be fixed as quick as what the white ball game was fixed, because I think there's a lot more than other than cricket to come into it. I think there's other people, commercial sides, broadcasting sides, will get in the way. And that worries me a little bit of where the domestic game could go and the knock-on effect and how we make our game better.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison, as we continue to dissect England's humiliating Ashes defeat in Australia. Next up, we'll look at how we can improve English cricket with the Daily Mail's Lawrence Booth. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and my usual co-host, the great Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. Lawrence, thank you very much indeed for your time from Melbourne. There's a level of bleakness to the feeling at the moment of what's happened, 68 all out, that I would imagine there's you're almost facing a choice between laughing and crying, aren't you?
Yeah, we've entered the gallows humours phase of the tour probably sooner than we thought we might. This is my fifth tour of Australia as a journalist, and three of the previous four have been disasters. There was the blip in 2010-11, the glorious blip when Andrew Strauss led England to 3 innings victories, and the Australian cricket was the game in crisis then. But we're back to a familiar tale here, really, of dissecting the English game, wondering how they can improve, why it always goes so wrong in Australia. it has been a case of having to laugh rather than cry, to be honest. And 68 all out was really the biscuit, I'm afraid to say.
You mentioned 68 all out. I couldn't believe the capitulation of the last sort of 45 minutes of the test match at Melbourne. Is it as simple as saying we're not good enough, or have we got the management side got questions to answer on not only the preparation, but what's gone on in the last 18 months leading to what's happened over the last 3 weeks?
Yeah, I think, first of all, there is a gap between the England and Australian teams, especially in Australian conditions. The Australian attack out here is world-class, and they're slotting guys into that sort of third seamers role, Joss Hazlewood being injured, who are doing well. Jai Richardson comes in, gets 5 for at Adelaide. Scott Boland, 6 for 7 this morning. Utterly ridiculous, really. But the second point you raise is probably the more significant one. England have put all their eggs in the Ashes basket for the last 18 months. They've talked a good game on rest and rotation, which I understand. You mentioned the COVID bubbles earlier. It's hard work mentally for the players, and they've decided to look after the players. We asked Chris Silverwood about this, and he said, I judge it by the human being standing in front of me. And that is a totally commendable position to take, you know, that they are human beings we're talking about. On the other hand, the cricketing fallout from that has been that players have been left out at the wrong times. The test team's been able to gain no momentum, really. You know, look at Moeen Ali in India, for instance, played one test, then went home. Joss Butler sitting out a big chunk of that tour. Facing New Zealand in England with half a second 11, you know, James Bracey keeping wicket, scoring 2 noughts in his first 2 innings. You could pick any number of incidents in the year where they basically sacrificed the test team on the altar of the Ashes. And here we are now in Australia, and the planning has come to nothing. I mean, it makes you weep for what's happened in the last 18 months. And of course, there is the overarching question of the white ball obsession in England that I know you've touched upon as well. This is not a test team that has been set up to succeed. And I feel sorry for Joe Root. I mean, I don't happen to think he's a particularly good captain tactically. So it's a combination of all those things, and Australia are cashing in. Why shouldn't they?
Lawrence, I like the analogy of you said that England have put all their eggs in the Ashes basket, but you need to treat eggs with care. It just seems to me that the ECB have been far more driven by commercial imperative. I mean, it's, you know, the brief has been to make as much money as possible at the expense of almost everything else. I mean, putting the eggs in the Ashes basket is really only a metaphor, because they haven't done that. They've marginalised the first-class game. And there's also an issue about coaching at the highest level. I mean, I'm talking about county level, and because too many England batsmen have got faulty techniques. And, you know, and it was Paul Farbrace said a couple of days ago that technique has been coached less and less. It's more sort of new age coaching, allow players to make discoveries for themselves, work it out for themselves. And it just seems that they can get away with it maybe at county level, but not at the highest level.
Yeah, those are all fair points. I mean, look, England did have a plan for Australia a few months ago, and that was to hit them with pace. Jofra Archer, Mark Wood, Ollie Stone. And Wood's been one of their best bowlers out here. I mean, his figures don't reflect how well he's bowled. He's been outstanding. Archer got injured. Stone is probably always a bit optimistic to think that he would somehow win them the Ashes. He's only played 2 tests and always gets injured. But nevertheless, there was a plan, and that's what I'm talking about the eggs in the Ashes basket. Now that fell away, and then we're left with a situation where the players they do have to call on have not had the red ball games under their belt, because precisely the what you're talking about there, the money making obsession, the 100, which has taken over a huge chunk of the summer months. Red Bull cricket's now played, you know, you've heard this often enough, but in April and May, and then in September, when the pitches are the most helpful to 70 mile an hour seamers, batsmen can't work on their techniques. They give it away for 40 and think they've done well. And yeah, the coaching issue is a fascinating one, actually. And I read that piece that Paul Farbrace, the interview he did with Rob Johnston on CricBuzz, I thought it was very insightful, essentially saying that coaches are scared of telling the millennial generation of batsmen what they should and shouldn't do, that encouraging them to play their own game. But the the array of techniques we've seen out here in Australia, it's been a circus act, really. The Australian broadcasters and media have delighted in dissecting the likes of Rory Burns, for example, in the first two tests. The very first ball of the series said everything, didn't it? It was a leg stump half volley that any self-respecting opening batsman would have flipped for four. And he sticks his front foot outside the line of off stump, gets into a terrible tangle, and is bowled behind his legs. That was a humiliating start and should have sent alarm bells through ECB towers. A few of us were, the day before the third test at Melbourne, we went and watched the nets, and we saw the bizarre sight of Burns and Hamid being asked to bat on one leg, supposedly to improve their balance. I thought if England's opener, Haseeb Hamid, is going to batting on one leg the day before a crucial Boxing Day test, we are in serious trouble.
I thought he was getting ready for the Christmas party. I thought he was doing hokey cokey when I seen that on the TV. So, and as a bowler, you just start laughing. And the simple fact is, it's not so much where does it go now, it's how does it go now? Because I think a lot of us ex-players will say where it's gone wrong and what needs to improve. But how can it improve because of the likes of the commercial-driven white ball element of our sport, which we need because we need to generate money to keep facilities in tip-top condition. We need to make sure grassroots is producing these young players. There seems to be the middle bit that we struggle in. The middle bit is the fundamental bit, which is the grounding of county cricketers, which is the understanding of the game as played over 4 days. To get yourself ready to play for 5 days, and the art of batting, of being able to bat for 6 hours, seems to have disappeared from the modern gear game.
Well, I'll tell you what, there are two types of future, there's short-term and long-term. Let's take the long-term first. They've got to recalibrate the county setup so that the Red Bull four-day cricket is taken seriously again and played on a variety of pitches spread across the summer so that everyone comes into the game. I mean, in Australia, famously, you tend to need fast bowlers and leg spinners to do well. And in English cricket, it's been generally quite bad at producing both. I mean, they left Matt Parkinson behind the Lancashire leg spinner, who could beat both edges of the bat. Now, why not give it a go? I mean, they clearly don't trust Jack Leach, but they brought him on just after lunch on the second day, and he bowled outside leg stump to a terrible field. I mean, it was embarrassing. It said a lot about the state of English spin bowling. So they've got to take Red Bull cricket seriously again. How they do that now that the 100 has come in as well as T20, I do not know, because so many reputations, so much broadcasting money has been predicated on the success of the 100, and I don't see that changing over the next few years. If that doesn't... Okay, let's go short term. I heard what Harmy said about changing the coach and the captain won't work, but I think they've got a problem in that dressing room. That is that Root and Silverwood are too similar. I like them both. I think they're nice guys. But it takes a lot to rile them. And that was why the story after the Adelaide test, where they were made to watch video, the batsmen made to watch videos of their dismissal, and there's a bit of shouting. That's why it made such headlines, because they never shout. What they need is someone, I think, a technician who's willing to tell them where they've gone wrong. Now, look at the other dressing room in Australia, where Justin Langer has got a lot of stick for his approach to man management. But I wonder if a guy like Langer is exactly what England need right now, someone who's not going to mollycoddle them and say, don't worry, and say after every test match, we'll put it right in the next three games or next two games or next one game, and they never do. They need someone to tell them now what they've done wrong, and someone who the guys respect. I think they like Silverwood. How much do they respect him? I don't know the answer to that. What I do know is that Root and Silverwood together aren't working.
The one thing I'll say on that, though, Lawrence, in... probably the coaches that have been successful in English cricket are outsiders. And they've told the ECB, no, we're not doing it that way. We're doing it this way because it's my job. I'm the coach. I'm going to tell you how I'm going to run this ship, not ECB yes men. And I think we have got a lot of ECB yes men. When you look at, I'm even hearing stories that coaches have to apply to be a coach on a touring party. That's mind-boggling. And if I'm a player in that team and I'm watching a coach come through the door who I know, but I've not had any dealings with before, come into the group, he's trying to justify his job. The whole thing is just a mess. And when I look at someone like Duncan, who I didn't really get on with, you look at someone like Trevor Bayliss, again, had a relaxed mentality, but the ECB were frightened of him because he had a track record of winning. And Andy Flower, who was probably in between a yes, an ECB yes man, but had so much kudos as a player and a leader that the ECB basically let him do what he did. Now we've got a lovely fella. I love him to bits, Chris Silverwood. He's a really, really good man. But sometimes you don't need good men in coaching positions at the very top. You need somebody that's going to tell people what, not just what they think of them, but you tell the administrators what's actually happening, not what we think should happen. This is happening. And I think that's where we get lost. And the biggest example I've got, why is the white ball team so successful? Because Owen Morgan runs that ship. Owen Morgan tells them what they're doing. And Owen Morgan gets what he wants because he's built up the kudos to say, I've got the track record and background and knowledge and got trophies in the back to say, this is what's happening, not what I think should happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point about an outsider is a really good one. I'll take you back 2 years when Chris Silverwood got the job, and the guy who thought he was going to get the job was Gary Kirstein. Gary came over for interview more or less thinking it was a done deal, but didn't impress them at the interview because his basic attitude was, look, I don't know these guys yet, but once I do get to know them, I'll work with them. Silverwood did a good PowerPoint presentation, ticked all the right ECB boxes and walked into the role. But which of those two is going to solve England's top order Red Bull problems? I mean, it's an absolute no-brainer. I mean, English cricket has always needed outsiders, always, because it's too cozy, it's too conservative. It's why Flower did well. It's why Fletcher did well. Even Morgan, who comes from Dublin, is actually an outsider. Trevor Bayliss, who won a World Cup. English cricket has always needed someone to shake it up against its better instincts. And I suspect Kirstein, in his own quiet way, would have done that more effectively than Silverwood has done.
Lawrence Booth, thank you so much for your time. You must head off into Melbourne now and find yourself a consolation glass of wine.
Or three. That's very much the plan. Thank you.
Lawrence Booth there from the Daily Mail and, of course, the editor of the Wisden Almanac. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thomason.
England have been beaten by Australia. Australia have won the third test match by an innings and 14 runs, and in doing so have won the Ashes. They have retained the urn, and they have done so comprehensively, bowling England out for their lowest score of the series so far. Australia have wrapped up victory at the MCG early on day three. They have embarrassed the old enemy once again, bowling them out for 68 to win by an innings and 14 runs and take the Ashes.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Steve Harmison as we continue to look back at England's humiliating defeat to Australia in the third Ashes test as the hosts retained the urn at the MCG. Well, it's interesting, Joe. It wouldn't have been the easiest post-match press conference that Joe Root did. This is what he had to say about the squad. He said that he believes that that England have their best 18 red ball players in Australia.
The best 18 players from the county game are definitely on this tour. And, you know, there's some very talented players within this squad. And we have to just keep looking to find ways of upskilling ourselves and each other and managing pressure points within the game better. And I think that's a big part of this game. It's a big part that, unfortunately, sometimes and where the game's at in our country right now, the only place you can really learn that is in the hardest environment for what is quite a young batting group. They're having to learn out here in, the harshest environments. Maybe you look back at 2015 and the reset that happened in white ball cricket, maybe that's something that needs to be had in our red ball game as well. But again, like I said, I think that is a long conversation that we should probably have with you guys at another time.
It's quite possible that they do have the best 18 red ball players, although I think it may well have taken us over 30 test matches to come to the conclusion that Jos Buttler is a white ball player. Nonetheless, he does hint there, Harmy, that test cricket needs a reset in England. He wasn't specific. He might not have specific thoughts, but there was at least a recognition and an admission that they're going to have to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah, and the drawing board is the basics. And what's the basics? The fundamental basics of test match cricket is, in England, you can probably get away with having a first inning score of between 350 and 400. Since February, England have won once. In 21 innings, they've scored 300 four times, but two of them have been 302 and 303. So effectively, they've scored over 305 twice in 21 innings. That's not giving you a chance to do anything. England have largely been pulled out of the mire by their bowling attack and by their captain. I think the fourth leading run scorer in 2021 is extras for England, which is scary. You know, the way the captain's performed, 600s with only 100 from everybody else, just tells the whole story. And when Joe says it needs a rethink, I think it does. And you keep banging on about county cricket and banging on about the best players. If England went down the road of not taking any of the Ashes squad to the West Indies, and they basically said, right, we're going to give everybody a break because it's been a horrendous winter, physically and mentally, then we're going to throw everybody into county cricket at the start. 18 players that have gone on the Ashes trip, I think by end of May, will be the best 18 players in county cricket. These are good players. You know, they are players who have done it in county cricket. And that, for me, is the problem, because the technical side of some of our work, and we can go on about the plan and preparation, the coaching, and how people are being coached and what information's going in, how they're being challenged. Go back to working with Duncan and working with Peter Moores, because I'm only talking about experiences. The challenges they would set, the questions they would ask you. You know, Jeff Cook at Durham. I'm still frightened of Jeff Cook. I played golf with Jeff Cook at the end of September. Hadn't seen him for 3 months. And he walked through the door and I nearly stood to attention. And I'm 43 year old. And I'm still scared of Jeff Cook. And I've had him since I was 15, 16. Still scared of him. Even though I didn't get on with him. Duncan had that fear over you as well. I don't think that's the case when it comes to this management team. I think the players are more powerful than the coaching system that's there. They dictate to what's happening a little bit. I think that needs a little bit of a reset as well. And look, we can go around in circles talking about what's just happened. I think the most important thing from now on, the ECB, whatever big wigs, when the first meet in early January, that is the time to start and reset the red ball game in this country, to balance it with the white ball game.
You know, I want to make a comment, but first of all, let's hear what Johnny Bairstow said after the MCG debacle.
We've got to get a bit stronger and tougher with our dismissals. We know that, we've spoken about that. And that's just being honest with ourselves. So look, we need to keep doing that. We saw in that second innings at Adelaide that we batted for a period of time and put a lot on each of our wickets.
That's Johnny Bairstow. saying that the England batsmen need to put more value on their wickets. They need to stop playing inappropriate shots. That's what they need to do. I think, Harmy, that for many, many years, ever since one-day cricket was invented and T20 cricket was invented, there was a belief that you needed to play lots of it to get into that format, and that you needed to play lots of first-class cricket, red ball cricket, to get out of that format. It was all very much like Pavlov's dog, you know, you ring a bell and the dog gets a biscuit, you ring a dog. And I think that we've moved away from that because, strangely enough, on the first day of the first test between South Africa and India, KL Rahul, one of the world's most destructive T20 batsmen, with a strike rate in T20 internationals of 140+, made a test 100, opening the batting from 218 balls. He played with ferocious, relentless discipline. He didn't play a single loose shot. So it's a question, and I know I'm sounding a bit frustrated, but it's a question that I'm asking you. Is it simply a matter of mind over matter? I think the days are gone. You're not going to get 3-4-day warm-up games. No way. COVID's seen to that now. The days of warm-up games are over. Administrators won't schedule them anymore because they've seen that they're not necessary when they can squeeze in more revenue-generating games rather than revenue-losing games. And it just seems to me, you know what, you need to say, Johnny, Joss, Ben, if you can't change mode in your mind, then you're not going to play, you're not multi-format.
Yeah, and that's a valid point. You know, I watch KL Rahul's innings. I watch highlights of the KL Rahul's innings because I was asleep. I was shaking my head. It nearly came off. My head was shaking nearly as much as Warnie's was shaking on that first morning at Edgbaston when Ricky decided that he was going to bowl first on a flat wicket without McGrath. And I couldn't believe it. And it was like, you know, this guy, you're right, most destructive batsman, but he valued his wicket. He had a game plan. He had a mechanism. Going to Australia is difficult. Don't get me wrong, ball bouncing. They leave balls that we've been playing. And I just look at, you come back to the system. You know, you've got to learn how to bat for 6 hours. You've got to learn how to have value on your wicket and the discipline, like you mentioned with KL Rahul. One example that I keep going back to, a very, very young Ian Bell made his debut in 2004. You know, he didn't have the greatest Ashes first series in 2005. He played in a very, very good side that managed to win the series. And that was his first win of a five Ashes winning cycle. Ian Bell was what? I think he was about 21 when he made his debut. He had played 100 first-class matches before his debut. 100 first-class matches before his debut. He learnt the art of batting. He had a defence. His ability to score first-class hundreds was there because he was getting 3 and 4 a year. I joked last night on the couch watching on BT. We'd sit on media day every year, March 30th, and you'd all talk, who's going to get fastest to 1,000? Is it going to be Steve James? Is it going to be Graham Hick, Mark Rampakash? Is it going to be all these guys that's going to do it? You know, and then it got on to the likes of Rob Key, who got 2,000 runs, nearly 2,000 runs in a calendar year. Man, as me and you did a whole summer on this collective and county cricket, we pushed these kids and wanted them to do well. I think 3 players in the county system this year got 1,000 runs. And I think one of them, you know, and that was, and we were like, you would have 3 players before June the 1st get 1,000 runs in bygone days. So that's why I think the techniques aren't there, because they're not having to bat for such a long period of time. And that is another thing that's wrong with the game and the mentality of these young players.
Finally, Harmy, just before we wrap up, we're going to hear from Jimmy Anderson in part 4, the England's highlight at age 39. But I just want to ask you just briefly, Ollie Pope and Zach Crawley seem to have gone backwards. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. And I think England are... they seem to be sort of caught between a rock and a hard place on what to do with Crawley and with Pope. The right thing was to leave Pope out for his own good. You know, he wasn't scoring any runs. He looked a bit fidgety. Do you chuck them all in, sink or swim time? You give young Yates a go at the top of the order with Crawley. Milan's there at three, Root there at four. And I'm saying this because I said earlier that I'd potentially let them all have a break. But if you were looking at a side going forward, do you get more cricket into Ben Stokes? Yeah, you know, just play the red ball. You know, he's only going to play the red ball leg. He'll get better. You know, what do you do with Bairstow? Has Butler played his last game for England? Wokes played his last game for England. All these questions need answering. But I don't think it's just Pope and Crawley. They're young. And it was a stat during the week. I can't remember who it was from. The stat during the week was alarming. Since in the last 6 years, batsmen have made their debut. Folks at 30, 31, I think. Milan at 30, and there was somebody else at 30. Everybody else, 29 and below. That is just mind-boggling. That we can't find batsmen in the last 6 years to average 40. One batsman to average 40 to help Joe Root, to help Ben Stokes do both bat and ball. That's where the techniques and everything are falling down.
There's a whole bunch of numbers and statistics that are damning. 26 batters have made debuts since Joe's debut in 2012, and not one of them has averaged close to 40. But time for a break. In part four, we'll conclude our dissection of the MCG Test match with the one bright point to come out of it. And then we'll discuss what's happening in the cricket world around the rest of the world.
The environment that they're coming from is not readying them well enough for Test cricket. And it's a very difficult place to, with everything that surrounds Test matches and different conditions and environments, if you're not ready going into it, it makes it very difficult to improve in that environment.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and my regular co-host, Steve Harmison. Well, there was an interesting moment after the MCG Test match when Chris Silverwood suggested that there were some positives that could be taken out of the result. I'm not sure what they were, other than Jimmy Anderson, who was asked rather mischievously by an Australian journalist how he felt doing what he had just done, bowling so well, only for the batsman to let him and the other bowlers down so badly.
To be honest, I think it's dangerous to go into talking about, certainly as a bowler, talking about our batting and stuff like that. We're a team here. We're all working really hard to try and put in some, you know, much better performances. We're trying to improve as a group. You know, we know we haven't bowled great in the first two games. We know we could have bowled better, and we've gone away and worked hard. And this week, I think we put in a much better performance. And all I can see from the batting group is how hard they're working to try and put things right. And you know, it can be very difficult in sort of foreign conditions against a class bowling attack. It can be difficult. So I don't want to get into too much of a bowler's versus batter sort of thing. We're a team here and we're all working hard to try and get better.
There was Jimmy Anderson trying very hard not to let a rift develop between the batters and the bowlers. It's a difficult thing, isn't it, Harmy? I mean, it does happen. You know, you flog your backside off. You run into the wind, bowling 30 overs of fast, and then the batters don't let you have more than a couple of sessions off.
Yeah, England have fielded 10 out of the last 11 Ashes days, which is difficult for. And you talk about bright spark. The bright spark would have been Jimmy Anderson to get through this series in one piece at 39-year-old, not lead the attack again for his 19th season in international cricket. I think in the bowling department, there's been some bright sparks. I think we talk about selection and decision-making until the cows come home. But Anderson's been, I think he's been unbelievable again. Question mark again. Can he do it away from home? Well, after his 37th birthday, he's done it in India, he's done it in Sri Lanka, and he's done it in Australia. I thought Broad bowled well in the Adelaide Test in patches. I think Robinson has bowled well consistently for his first sort of two or three spells and then naturally got tired, but he'll get better over the course of time when he plays more and more international cricket and his body, he starts looking after his body, because I think I'm not sure he looked after his body before he played his first test match, but I think the penny's dropped and he's starting to improve his durability and fitness. So good luck to him on that. I think he's been a fine. And I think the pace of Mark Wood has been just, it's been unbelievable. You know, to have the pace like that consistently throughout the day for a captain is something you desperately need, especially in the Southern Hemisphere. So I think there has been bright sparks on that side of it. But undoubtedly, he's going to retire whenever he wants to retire. We're going to have to look at times when we haven't got Broad and Anderson. But at this minute in time, Jimmy's going nowhere. If Jimmy wants to play Test cricket, he's going nowhere, because he's still the best we've got. And what he did throughout this last 3 days just proves the fact that not only he is the greatest, he's a fantastic role model for any young player to say why you can do it at 39, because the level of work, the level of discipline, and the will to get better is what drives Jimmy Anderson forward.
And in other news, there was a reminder last week that England are still very, very good at certain parts of cricket, notably T20. There's a white ball squad that was announced to take on the West Indies in a five-match T20 series. It obviously doesn't include anybody that is in Australia. It also includes Gloucestershire left-arm seamer David Payne, George Garton, and a very worthy and I think deserved call-up for Phil Salt. They were the names that stuck out to me.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, Salt, I'm pleased he's in the squad. I like the look at George Garton. I want another look at him in international cricket. See a lot of him in the domestic franchises around the world. And David Payne as well. I think he deserved his call-up for what he did for Gloucester last year and what he's been doing for Gloucester in the Blast and what he did in the 100. So it's a good, well-balanced squad. Led by Paul Collingwood, and that is somebody I know very, very well, who will be hurting. Paul will be hurting, I know that for a fact, because he had to leave the touring party in Australia because obviously, you know, his family, his daughters, to spend time over Christmas. And I think he goes over there, clear mind, scar-free from that Ashes trip. And I think England will go over there and it'll be a great contest, isn't it? I think it's going to be a great contest, England against the West Indies in 2020 cricket. Two formats of the game that both sides are very, very good at.
A couple of other pieces of news. Another great passed away, I'm afraid. Former England captain Ray Illingworth passed away, which leaves now only two surviving captains, England captains, to have won an Ashes series down under, because Ray Illingworth managed it in the 1970s. I remember the only time I remember having much to do with him was in 1994, when he was England manager, coach, and I think he drove the bus as well. He was selector as well. He was chief selector too, wasn't he? He was supremo Ray Illingworth, he was dubbed in the early 90s. I just remember him at Lord's, sitting next to Michael Atherton and completely disowning him. He didn't look at him after the dirt in the pocket affair. He slapped him with a £2,000 fine and basically sat there facing the media with his captain alongside him, calling him a disgrace.
Yeah, he was the typical Yorkshire. He was Yorkshire, 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 wasn't he? And can you imagine in that dressing room, Yorkshire dressing room, he had to lead it with the likes of Boycott and Truman, Illingworth, the way they were, the stubborn characters they were. And we have lost a great. He was great for English cricket as a player, as a captain, and as a selector. And he in 1971, when he was selected, when he was captain, he wrestled power from the selection panel to give more power to the captain, which obviously it was him. And then decided that when Michael Atherton became captain in 1993 or 1994, that he was going to wrestle the power back from the captain to give it back to the chairman of selectors because he wanted to be supremo. So typical Yorkshire, and it's a sad time, and condolences to the family. A great man lost of the cricket family.
What other news grabbed your attention? USA beating Ireland in a T20 international in Florida. That's massive news. And Harbhajan Singh hasn't played much cricket in the last couple of years, but he was still active as a squad member, really, in the IPL. But he's finally walked away from the game completely. He's retired from all formats. And finally, Ajaz Patel, who took all 10 wickets in a test match against India in Mumbai a month ago, has not cracked the New Zealand squad for the Bangladesh series.
That's mad, isn't it? It's absolute madness. It's crazy. But just shows you how ruthless the game can be sometimes. And he did. We commentated on the game, and once he got to 8, you knew he was going to get 10. And you're thinking, right, New Zealand have found a spinner in test match cricket that can potentially, you know, do them a good job for the next 5 years. He didn't even get the next five. He didn't even get the next 5 weeks. So it just shows you what cutthroat business it is when you play in this, what it can be for a spinner, playing in the subcontinent and then going back to a country which obviously is more conducive to seam and swing.
How about USA beating Ireland in a T20 international in America?
Unreal, isn't it? It's great for the commercial game. We've talked about the commercial game a lot in this last hour, and what obviously possibly needs to change to try and help the test match side. But for a strong America, wow, that would be huge. A global powerhouse like India and a global powerhouse financially like America. If you could get into an American sports with cricket, go around America with this great game we all love, then I think that could open doors. That could open so many doors. So, you know, well done to America. I know my mate Liam Plunkett is eyeing up potentially going over and working with the Americans, which will be great experience for them to have a World Cup winner in and around their squad. But it looks as though they've got things going in the right direction, because beating Ireland in a one-day game is no mean feat, because they're a decent side, Ireland.
Let's not deny COVID. In fact, let's give COVID the last word. I don't know whether you've got anything to say. I couldn't help noticing that somebody rather saltily observed that England has spent longer in quarantine in Australia than they have on the cricket field.
Yeah, and there was quite a few. David Gower had quite a few jokes out about COVID. COVID yesterday. My concern is, and that we have to touch on it, is we might have played the last test match of the Ashes. It's going to be interesting to see what happens from here, because if we were in Sydney, the game would have been called off day two because of the close contact 7-day quarantine rule of COVID getting into the England camp. If one of the players gets it, I think if I put myself in the players' shoes and I've got my family across there, if somebody in the players' camp got it, I think my family would be going home, and I think I'd be going home with them. I think there's a human element to sport, and that is something that there's bigger than cricket, bigger than sport. And I think with people dying of this disease, I think there'll be a lot of players anxious in that group. And we're hearing rumours that the players are being split up from the families. I just don't think the game can carry on. So where it goes from here, I think the next 48 hours, 72 hours, watch this space, because I think there could be some big news coming out of Australia if COVID continues to sort of get through into the camp. Might have to continue playing in Melbourne, might have to play the next two test matches in Hobart, but I don't think this group of Australian England players can go and play in Sydney.
And finally, thoughts and best wishes to former India captain and current BCCI president Sourav Ganguly, who had a heart attack a couple of months ago, and he's now been admitted to hospital with COVID. So the very best wishes to him. Thanks, Ami. As always, you've been listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast, as always, from the Following On feed, which is now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, we'll be back next week to look ahead to the fourth Ashes test. But for now, we wish you all a very happy new year.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.